You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
That's right, Whistler. Welcome to episode 35 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. We broadcast on Middle Earth Network Radio as well as on the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes are also available on our own Facebook page at SW Beyond Films. But enough about how you got here. Let's get this show on the road. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman. And with me, like a rabid fanboy at a celebration, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler!
Sorry, I literally was having to use an inhaler just now. No Vader impression intended, at least not originally. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Interesting way to start the show here.
I like to keep things a little fresh because, you know, there's so much freshness to go around lately.
Yeah, lots of new things popping up here. Hopefully not as disconcerting as some of the new stuff a little while ago with San Diego Comic Con, but it's a lot of stuff coming out of C6 and out of Fantasy Flight Games and such. So, I guess that sort of gives away what we're talking about this time. As always, folks, here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions, the ones that have bothered you for a long time, simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we take a look back at announcements coming out of Celebration 6 and the newest Star Wars gaming licensee, Fantasy Flight Games, to answer the question of what's coming soon for Star Wars. Consider this your spoiler warning, because, as always, here we go.
And boy, we are just jumping right onto it. I mean, this show note, for you that can't see it, whoo, it just keeps going and going and going. Nathan, you want to start us off on this? And maybe we'll just jump on a couple that really jump out at us as we go. There's a lot to cover this episode. Heck, it might even turn into two. Who knows at this point?
All right, well, let's see. I guess we could start with news coming out of Celebration 6. We'll leave the Fantasy Flight game stuff for a little bit from now. We have film news, Detours news, and Clone Wars news. So I guess we can start with the Clone Wars. At Celebration 6, we got a new trailer. We got an announcement of a new day and time. Clone Wars is going to now be a 9:30 in the morning on Saturday morning cartoon show, as opposed to being a Friday night prime time show for Cartoon Network. Though apparently that was Cartoon Network's decision, not Lucasfilm's, from what I'm understanding. And there's this rumor out there about a Young Jedi premise, some people thinking that it's supposed to be a separate show, though from what I understand, the Young Jedi The Gathering episode shown only to parents and young children at the Celebration 6 event is actually episodes of the regular series, not a separate series. And we got a premiere date, so Clone Wars will be returning to television on September 29th, so the end of the month in which you're hearing this episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. So a lot of new information coming at us for the Clone Wars, not counting just the stuff we see in the trailer, like story stuff. As far as the grand scheme of things for Clone Wars, quite a bit.
I find it interesting that Cartoon Network is moving the show. I mean, when I first heard that, it was a, whoa, wait, throw the brakes on here. Is this right, Whistler? Yeah, exactly. I don't think so. But finding out that it's Cartoon Network's decision, their choice, kind of makes a little more sense as to why we're seeing it. I mean, I from a Star Wars standpoint, can't imagine why they would change it. It seems like a winning scenario. It's a winning time frame. Don't mess with what's winning.
I think for me, the thing it's come down to is the content, because over time, Clone Wars has gotten a lot darker. I mean, I've been covering it. I covered it on the Butlerniverse back when I was doing that show. And then I became a regular on Republic Forces Radio Network, and we've been covering it for the last couple of years with the same team. And I got to tell you, one running theme, both before and after I hooked up with Republic Forces, has been how violent sometimes the show gets, and yet what lines it's not willing to cross when it comes to its younger audience. There's that infamous incident where you had Asajj Ventress kiss the clone before killing him, and that bit was just too much across the line, so that had to be cut out. But things like suicide.
I actually let my daughter watch that when she was the age group that they said it was too much for, and she's like, they cut that out?
Exactly.
It was on an episode of EUcast, in fact. I made her do it live. I'm like, hey, you haven't seen this, come watch this.
Yeah, so if you're going to have some darker stuff in there, like, you know, Carnage of Krell, like a suicide bomber, or I guess a bomber who commits suicide rather than being caught, as we saw in the Mandalorian arc, the first one, it just kind of seems weird that as the show gets darker, they're shifting it into a position where it's much more child-related. I can only imagine that it's one of two things. Either the Friday night time slot is not going as well as they had hoped, and they wanted to shift it hoping to find a bigger audience, or they're shifting into high gear for toy sales and want to see if they can shift it from being an evening thing where it's more of a family experience to something specifically geared towards that younger audience. Not necessarily in terms of content, but in terms of who's going to be watching it more often as it airs. Because now they can cram it full of tons and tons of Star Wars toy commercials and possibly get more kids out there begging the parents to buy the toys. But I don't know. It seems like Star Wars and the premise of it, as much merchandise as there is out there, you would think that that's not a big concern, that they're selling enough as it is, unless there's something I don't know about what's happening behind the scenes from a success standpoint. Maybe they don't feel like the show is as successful right now as they think it should be.
There's got to be a dollar bill attached here somewhere, whether it be from Cartoon Network or the other thing. When I think about TV shows that have been successful, every time they shift their time slot, you risk losing a lot of viewers. A lot of people, they don't know where it went, or they forget about it, or they're working that other day. You're banking on the kids here, that maybe that morning sales, but I don't know. It seems like such a winning scenario that if I was the powers that be at Star Wars, I'd be trying to find a way to get it back. I don't know. I mean, didn't they show it on Saturday morning anyway?
You know, I'm not sure, because I would always watch it. Me and my fiance would just watch it when it aired live, or we'd DVR it and then watch it as soon as we could. And I always also get, you know, I'm the multi-purchaser. I'm the one that's the problem in Star Wars fandom, because we just buy and buy and buy. I get it through iTunes so that I can watch them and slow them down if need be as I'm doing notes and such for Republic Forces and for the Star Wars Timeline Gold stuff, so I need to have those on the computer. I buy them when they come out on Blu-ray because they're gorgeous that way. But I also DVR them and we watch them on the main TV. But between all those viewings, I've never had a need to watch it back on television again outside of that very, very first time. So, you know, I have no idea when else they were airing these things. But if they were doing that, then that still it goes back to, okay, why? Unless there's something else they feel like, maybe if it's Cartoon Network side of things, maybe they think there's something else that would be much more successful for Cartoon Network sense in that time slot. Or maybe, just maybe, they've said something like, hey, this is going to be the last season we expect of Clone Wars, and Cartoon Network doesn't want to bank that Friday night time slot on something they know is going to end. They want to try to slip something else in there and see if they can get a new big moneymaker out of it. I don't know. It struck me as an odd decision. I'll still watch it. I may even get up early to watch it, but it still seems weird.
It does seem weird. I want to say 100% that this has to be a dollar thing from Cartoon Network standpoint, whether they want to make more money off of Star Wars or they want to make more money off that time slot. In fact, in these type of situations, if it is Cartoon Network, it would almost be nicer if when they made the announcement, they flat out said, look, this is the reason why we're doing this. But, you know, I recall when I did have cable TV, it did play on Saturday, and I think it played again on Sunday. But that was, you know, about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. I've been on Netflix and streaming online for a while now. And I like the fact that it streamed, I think it was by Sunday or Monday. I had to wait the weekend, and then I was able to catch it. But that's my concern, is now that it's pushed back a day, are they going to move the streaming up, or is that also going to be pushed back a day?
Right, and it's probably the same thing when it comes to iTunes. Now, iTunes probably won't have it until either Sunday or perhaps even Monday, which on my end kind of messes with us a little bit when it comes to Republic Forces. I won't be able to watch it in as much detail because I just can't do the detailed slowdown stuff with my DVR that I can do when I use either iTunes or QuickTime to go through and view it. There is other stuff, though, that came out with the Clone Wars. We did get to see a new trailer. We saw more about Onderon, which is cool to see that planet from Tales of the Jedi, and then that has shown up in Knights of the Old Republic and such, finally getting a little bit more play. We saw some more of the individual characters to get a sense of their personalities. We got to see how it looks like the Black Sun angle and the Mandalorian angle and the Maul and Savage angle are all actually the same angle, in that all three of those together are going to be going after both Mandalorian and Maul's desires. And I'm almost positive that in that trailer, I essentially saw Darth Maul in Mandalorian armor with a helmet that's done up in his facial marking or his tattoo style. Unless I'm totally imagining things from what I saw. So it looks like it's going to be a great season. And the trailer ends with what? Not only is Sidious fighting with lightsabers, Sidious is fighting with two lightsabers. against what looks like Savage and against Maul. Only thing I don't like about what I saw in the trailer, it looks like Asajj is going dark again somehow, or staying dark, because it shows her or someone wearing what looks like her armor doing some attacking, because you see a character that looks feminine attacking, and then later on you see Asajj herself in that armor with the faceplate up. So
another one of her where she is over Ahsoka Tano, and she's on her back, and Asajj has her customary Asajj Ventress lightsabers crossed over her with the mask down. And I was thinking the same thing. I'm all, who is it? Is that Asajj? And I was looking at the hands, and the hands are her classic white with her standard, you know, drill lightsabers. But it makes me wonder if this is a way to kind of keep Obsession.
Obsession, yeah.
Still in the way of, you know, keeping her kind of in there. But I don't know. I question the whole Darth Maul having the armor. I mean, that's going to be an interesting little twist on things. But with Sidious having the lightsabers, I think that's the one that I'm more perplexed with. I want to see if they do that. I want to see them not be his lightsabers, or if they are like some museum piece or something. Because Stover's novelization of Episode 3 was very distinct in the aspect that Palpatine's lightsaber was hiding inside that one statue and had been sitting there waiting. And so it would almost kind of taint the awesomeness of that lightsaber, of Palpatine's lightsaber, to find out that he had other lightsabers that he had been using. Granted, it could work, but I would rather have it be something where he grabs lightsabers from someone else. Like maybe the Mandalorians or the Death Watch have some extra ones from some Jedi or Sith that they killed way in the past. Or maybe he got them on Onderon or something. I'd like it to have a story behind it, as it were, not be left there and then later somebody comes along and retcons it in a silly direction where we're like, why would you do that?
Yeah, or at least make it something like it's their lightsabers that he had from Jedi that he killed or something like that, but
yeah.
or that the Separatists killed and he was given by Dooku as like a sign of loyalty or whatever. Or probably to make it even more amusing, make it be Grievous that got them, because Grievous doesn't realize what's going on, and you know, Grievous would be like, "Where the heck did you get those lightsabers?"
Be awesome if Grievous was hunting down Dooku's Dark Jedi. I brought you these two. Oh no.
I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, as long as they get destroyed or something, then it makes perfect sense for the only lightsaber he has in the novel to still be, you know, the one that he winds up using in the film. So I'm not too concerned about that. It looks honestly, the Asajj thing, the continuity guy in me says, hey, this might be a way to finally make Obsession and stuff actually work, minus at least one major Jedi Council member death happening in the season premiere that was aired at Celebration 6. And was spoiled by a book well beforehand, book previews on Amazon.
I've heard rumor of this, and maybe we might have to cut it out because it's too spoilerific, but you've got to tell me.
It's one that's been around, the way I understand it, it's a one that's been around since Episode 1. It's a female, unfortunately not Yaddle. Yaddle already died in a different way. The fact that they're doing that, to me, it fits. I mean, it might make it so that Obsession and stuff will work better, and you can fit it all together so that the continuity sort of can blend seamlessly, maybe doing that part the waters thing like they were saying at one point, you know, split it at Dreadnoughts of Rendili and just kind of scoot it over and stick Clone Wars down in the middle of it. But, you know, I don't know. Asajj Ventress's arc was probably the most interesting one of last season. To really see her come into her own and to see her backslide is going to feel like it was all a ruse. You know, it's like killing Superman only to bring him back. What was it, like five issues or whatever it was later? It just kind of seems to me like it might be a spoiled opportunity. But we know nothing, really. I mean, it's all speculation at this point. It's all just straight stuff out of a quick little trailer. A great trailer, but a quick little trailer. Notice there was also no subtitle given to this season. None of this Rise of the Bounty Hunters that will have almost no bounty hunters in it, or Battle Lines. It's not a whole lot of Battle Lines and stuff like that.
I was noticing that. That was an interesting little omitting there. You know, I was like, huh, how does that go? But you'd mentioned how the Maul, the Black Sun, the Mandalorians, and possibly even Sidious all seem to be one story arc there. And yet how it was originally, you know, we assumed it was going to be different story arcs. And that seems to be something that we get quite a bit, you know. And I think that backing off of titling it gets us fans to stop speculating too far and then getting upset or getting the old, oh, it's been hyped up, You know, I mean, well, no, it wasn't hyped up. It was just presented in order that allowed us to hype it up. Granted, when they gave us the titles, yeah, that did hype it up a little bit more. Maybe by removing the titles and giving you more of a context of, okay, these aren't really necessarily their own separate episodes, but one big story arc, maybe four or five, but they're all tied together. Maybe that will eliminate the fandom speculation going too far-fetched.
Yeah, and I guess as we sort of round out the Clone Wars topic, one thing that has popped up just recently, not at Celebration 6 that I know of, but it was something that was mentioned in the recent issue of Insider, the one that's got that new Cad Bane story in it called Reputation. We find that at least, I think it's three episodes, perhaps even more of the episodes on the Season 4 Blu-ray set and DVD set, but hey, watch it in Blu-ray, it's a lot better looking, are going to be director's cut versions of the episodes. So we'll get at least a tiny, tiny bit added into several of the episodes throughout the stuff that we saw for Season 4. So that'll be pretty cool, too. We haven't really seen much in the way of director's cut episodes, I guess, since Season 1 was released on Blu-ray. So lots of good stuff coming for Clone Wars. Speaking of that era, we've got some new news coming in on the films. Of course, we already saw The Phantom Menace in 3D, released earlier this year. They have finally given us release dates for Attack of the Clones and for Revenge of the Sith, both showing up in 3D. And they're doing a back-to-back sort of thing, kind of like what happened with the special editions, in that they're going to release Attack of the Clones in 3D in September of 2013, so September of next year, a little over a year from now. And they're also going to then be releasing Revenge of the Sith within 1 month's time in October of 2013. So rather than it being one in 2012, one in 2013, one in 2014, or anything like that, we're getting about a year, over a year, between episodes 1 and 2, but then 2 and 3 are incredibly close back-to-back. Makes me kind of wonder when they're going to be doing the classic trilogy stuff and why it is they chose to do it this way. I'm assuming it's for the momentum of jumping from one to the other, which makes me think they might do the classic trilogy very much like the special editions and do them bang, 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 maybe a month or two apart, all three of them, as if somehow they've learned a lesson, though I don't know what the lesson would be, from the long stretch between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. If they want the momentum, it certainly seems feasible.
Well, it's one of those where I'm like, I've seen these movies, so yeah. But the other side of it is like, why? Why set one out and put it out at the beginning of the year and then put the other ones towards the end of the year and then have them so close together? That part just kind of perplexes me. But again, it's movies I've already saw, so it's not like I'm itching and dying to go see it because it's something I've never seen before. I'm going to definitely go and see them, take my kids. It's a fun experience nonetheless, but it does have me scratching my head as to the why so long between episode 1 and episode 2 to turn around and do 3 a month later.
Yeah, and I will say, though, the big news I wanted to hear about the 3D Star Wars films was not, hey, when are we going to see the other ones in theaters, although that was important. I want to know when they're coming out on 3D Blu-ray. Are we going to have to wait for all the movies to be out, or for at least all of one trilogy to be out, before we get 3D Blu-rays? Because I much prefer to watch not only films at home, as we've talked about before, but 3D Blu-rays at home, as opposed to going to see 3D films in the theaters. I actually find the experience to be quite a bit better, and the quality of the 3D really pops a lot more, because I can control my own lighting sources around me and adjust it as I might need to, which I can't do, of course, at a theater. So,
yeah.
Great to see that they're going to have the next two in the theaters, but it's more interesting to me to say, oh, so those two are now going to be in the theaters? Great, that means we're one step closer to Blu-rays for home, so I can buy the stinking saga again.
And I guess I'm probably one of those you're going to hate. I kind of hope they wait on doing the 3D Blu-ray until they've done it all and they've all hit the theaters. Because, you know, we know George, he likes to tinker, and just in case, maker forbid it, he decides to tinker, I'd like him to be able to tinker with them all at once instead of in a stage, and then we got to wait for the special edition of the Blu-ray 3D to get them all, the Tinkerer's Edition, I don't know. But with the way things change in our ever-changing fandom, I'd kind of rather they wait till all of them have been through theater and then release them in a big gift set or singly or however they plan on marketing it. But at least wait till they've all gone through theater.
Right. And just something where we feel like we're not going to be turning around and just a short time later buying something all over again.
Another one of these situations where it's kind of like, well, it doesn't really matter, is Star Wars Detours. We got some information about that. There were some clips. You know, now, Nathan, you put in here Leia and Han complaints that are unfounded. I hadn't heard any of those yet. I just heard, you know, people, some either liked it and some didn't. I know there was a lot of tongue-in-cheek, this is canon, and it's got its whole new D-level canon, this, that, and the other thing, and I don't know what to make of that yet. That I'm not going to drag into this. But what are these complaints, though, that you're mentioning?
Oh, I'll say the D-canon thing had a lot of people defecating bricks, so to speak, but I'm not sure if we should take that seriously or not. But it would make sense that, you know, they might say, well, among in-canon, the non-canonical stuff, Detours kind of gets its own category because it is a TV show. Clone Wars, you know, gets its own little category with the T-canon thing. But among all the clips that we saw the ones with Han and Chewie. We saw Leia kind of as the pop princess type character. Vader interacting with Palpatine. I'll say I was not all that impressed at first, but it's because I guess the first one I saw was the Han and Chewie clip. After seeing several other ones, I was particularly interested in it. And I like Robot Chicken. I think they do a really good job. I'm curious how clean the humor in this show will be, because that doesn't exactly seem the forte of the Robot Chicken guys to do purely clean humor. The big thing that was coming out where I saw some sites already starting to be like, well, I don't like this because, was the fact that Han, when we see him in Detours, assuming this is even like a series and not just a bunch of skits, assuming it's even a series with stories where the characters stay the same episode to episode, Han is shown as an adult, probably pre-rebellion, but it's him and Chewie aboard the Millennium Falcon. He's an adult. But then Leia is shown as this little young teenage pop princess type character where, oh, wait a second, she's very young, so isn't that basically pedophilia? Isn't this, oh, we know they're going to end up together, so there's Han the adult and Leia the kid. What the heck is up with that?
Well, wasn't there a 10-year gap between them anyway? I mean, come on, people. Look at your teenage kids. Look at your 20-year-old kids. There is a difference from your 20-year-old to your 10-year-old. One looks like an adult and one looks like a kid.
Yeah, and that's the thing. People were missing that whole 10-year gap. I mean, he's 29 in A New Hope. She's 19. There's a 10-year gap. So if she's, let's say she's 14 years old or whatever, in the way they're trying to portray her as the young teen, well, then that would make him, 24? So, of course, there'd be that big gap. I mean, and I deal with that thing in my real life all the time. My fiance and I, depending on what time of year it is, are either 9 or 10 years apart. She was born in 89. I was born in 79. Her January, very early in the year. Me, October, fairly late in the year. So, you know, we know that if we had met under different circumstances quite a while ago and gotten to know each other, she would have been like the little kid neighbor sidekicky type person,
you
not the person I'm going
robber.
To marry. Exactly. So, I don't know. And the same thing, I would say that if I'm doing the math right, the 10-year gap also applies to my mom and my stepmom and my dad. There's a pretty big gap between my mom and my stepdad. I mean, it's kind of a normal thing for adults, but you have to understand that if adults are going to have a large age difference, then at some point in their lives, if you went backwards, yeah, you're going to get to a point where the age difference would have been inappropriate. But see, that's the thing. They weren't around each other at the time, so why are you griping? I was going to drop the B word. Why are you griping about something that logically makes perfect sense? I would be annoyed if they were both portrayed as if they were the same age in Detours, if it was supposed to be something with an actual storyline to it, because then it wouldn't make sense. 10 years apart? Duh! That's what they are!
Yeah, quit your biffing. But, you know, it's one of those things, I see it, in a sense, as N-level canon. You know, this is just for fun. When they mention that whole D-level canon, the only thing I'm going to say on that for now, and if you listeners want us to really go in on it more, we can, is I'm now looking at the Holocron as just an internal for the Del Rey, the Dark Horse, and all that tracking system. And all you're seeing canon levels are at this point is just tracking. I've come to see it in a totally different light than what I used to see it about 4 or 5 years ago. And so them saying it's a new canon level, all I see that as is as a way to track and categorize it. That's it.
Different entry in the spreadsheet, basically.
Pretty much, yep.
And now that moves us into books. And we had quite a bit of new book information. We found out that the next Essential Guide to Characters is coming, a third one, that's going to have Doug Wheatley, who does the art for Dark Times, doing the interior art. We found that there is going to be a new trilogy of novels by Christy Golden set after Fate of the Jedi that is focusing on the Sword of the Jedi, focusing on Jaina Solo.
Now, when that one came out, Nathan, I was originally like, ooh, what's this? And then I saw Christy Golden, and I have no issue with Christy Golden. So let me say that first and foremost. My concern here is for EU characters. You know, we've wanted this next generation to have their moment in the sun. We're getting that. Christy Golden, though, is new to Star Wars enough that I'm afraid that if this trilogy doesn't do successfully, they may, granted fans will probably just pin it all on her, but I'm afraid that the powers may say, well, the character is not sellable. And I'm concerned with that. It's not too bad of a concern. I dug Omen. I dug the other books in Fate of the Jedi. They were good. I like Christie's work. I'm willing to give it a go. But there is that concern with Jaina Solo being the next-gen character, and this is finally a trilogy of books hinging on one of those characters. I'm just concerned that whether or not this is met with success or failure, if it's going to mark the same for EU characters everywhere at their chance of getting a book or series.
Yeah, but somebody has to do it sometime. I mean, to at least make it someone who is familiar with the universe, familiar with the characters. I mean, I liked Christy Golden's stuff. I hear a lot of complaints about people who talk about like her portrayal of women. I thought that she portrayed the women as human beings, and that's hopefully the way the men are also going to be portrayed as human beings. And I did enjoy her contributions to Fate of the Jedi and her contributions to the development and initial appearance of Vestara Kai. So I'm interested in seeing this, and I'm not sure that I would have felt as confident as I am with her if we were to have the Sword of the Jedi books being written by someone who either was entirely new to Star Wars or was not a woman. And I know they say that the gender of an author doesn't make that much of a difference in the writing because characters are characters. But I think one of the things Star Wars needs to do better, and we talked about this on the show a while back, is give us the strong female characters that give us a female character who is a well-rounded individual, not someone who is essentially almost female in gender only, where everything else is male. They just kind of tweaking, oh, well, now we're going to make this character a little more sexy. Ha, ta-da, see, it's a woman now. I think she can do that. If only coming from the fact that she has the experience of living life as a woman, she can hopefully put more of that that spin on it a little bit. You know, I'm actually in the process now of rewriting a book that I self-published back in 2006 called Echoes. And the first chapter, at the beginning of the original version of it, it was essentially a woman gets killed. You don't know a whole lot about her, and you learn more about her through the investigation that happens later. I want to flesh it out more for this rewritten, sort of relaunched idea so we can launch it as a series. And I'm finding that getting into the head of this character that I thought I knew so well based on the original writing, it's changing my perceptions of what she would do, why she would do it, who she would interact with, and how people would interact with her, how they would look at her after she was dead, just to play out some of the human-style interactions that she must have had. So we need somebody who can get into the head of a female character and give us something that is very strong and yet solid from a storytelling standpoint, because you're right, it could be something that could be a death knell for more EU character-based novels. What I want to know is how are they going to market it? Because you know, it seems as though they're afraid sometimes to market Star Wars books, and comics really a lot of times, that don't have other major film characters somewhere either on the cover, in the background. I mean, Han and Chewie showed up in Agent of the Empire briefly. Han and Chewie show up in Death Troopers. So there's those angles to it. And of course, you know, Fate of the Jedi, as you go through there, with very few exceptions, I say about a nice chunk of the books, would have characters that we know from the films in there. You look at most Star Wars novels, really, and you wind up with film characters on them, even if they're not quite as focused, or there's almost no characters whatsoever, like the X-Wing books, where it's familiar ships that are drawing you in, not familiar EU characters. So this could be a huge deal. I'm hoping that it winds up going well, and you know, I have great faith that it will, but it's one of those things where it needs to be done right. And I think they can appreciate it needs to be done right because of what it is.
Well, and like I said, I'm excited about it. I think I'm kind of happy that they did not choose Troy Denning to do it. I like Troy Denning. Don't get me wrong here when I go into this. But I think Denning has really started to oversaturate this era. And when it comes to the Sword of the Jedi, that's been kind of, you know, something that he's been running with a lot of late. And so, yeah, I'm glad that they decided to give Christy Golden the chance. You know, my only concern is for more EU books down the road. The other side of it was the placement. I'm excited that they're continuing on with the timeline. I've always said that for me has been my bread and butter. The recent moment, you know, whatever that moment is being pushed out with Luke in his life. In this case, now with the next generation characters, that's it. They could have easily gone back and done a Jaina Solo story anywhere in the past, you know, 20 years of her life. But they decided to keep pushing the envelope forward in the overall timeline. So that's cool because the galaxy is going to be continuing to evolve as we go as well. But that's not to say that I don't want to see them go back and fill out some of these characters and their other timelines and give us some standalones and series like that. Like they're doing with Mara. Mara seems to be, and the big three are like the only ones that they're doing that with. In fact, Mara seems to be the only EU character that we're getting anything like the treatment the big three get. And that's nice to see that Mara gets it. But I would like to see some solo kids get it. I mean, when you think about some of these younger generations when their youth was just completely skipped over and it all happened off page, you know, there's a lot to be played with there.
Of course, now they're very much adults. I'd be interested to see if perhaps it'd be hilarious if with all the buildup of Sword of the Jedi and the prophecy and everything, given the fact that they don't refer to their weapons as swords, they think of them as sabers, lightsabers. It'd be funny if sword was an acronym. She's the S-W-O-R-D of the Jedi, and that somehow, like, turns into words. You know, the special, or perhaps with the whole thing, that it winds up being something where it sort of turns things on its head. It'd be interesting to see her set up sort of the new paradigm where maybe we're seeing things because of her being married to Jag. Maybe it's something that could be told at least partially from an Imperial point of view to set up things like, you know, the Empire as we know it from getting towards legacy, perhaps, because we don't know, you know, when Fel was in charge as head of state, does that count as him being Emperor Fel the First? Or is there still another Fel?
Yeah, that's another side
Fel?
Of this that I'm excited about. I mean, that whole thing right there, and the fact that we're going to get it from Jaina's perspective. You know, when Fate of the Jedi had Tahiri take on the role of Emperor's Hand, I thought for sure she was going to be the first Imperial Knight. I mean, I keep thinking it's going to be Jaina, but at that moment I thought, oh, it's going to be Tahiri. And then they made her an Emperor's Hand, and I was like, oh, that's even cooler still. Like, how does that work, you know? But I'm really stoked to see that play out. That's one of the ones, that and Kruk finally making into a book are events that are, for me, long overdue, that I'm just dying to see it happen.
I want to see Kruk show up on the Clone Wars cartoon show, if for only... the reason that I want to hear his name pronounced to figure out how the heck to say it. It. Now, also in books, we have two more books coming that were somewhat surprising. We have Kevin Hearn, I believe that's how you pronounce it, and Martha Wells, both writing books in a new quasi-series called Rebels, or at least being called Rebels for now. And the idea is that Hearn is writing a book focused on Luke, Wells is writing a book focused on Leia, and it's within the time frame of the classic trilogy. And part of me has me sitting back, as one would expect, saying, again? You know, this time period, again? So now, they're not even going to have time to put on their Space Depends, since they don't have time to go to the bathroom. They're just going to have to get something surgically implanted to, like, mystically teleport out the urine and everything else, because they're not going to be able to go to a bathroom or go buy any Depends or anything like that.
Hey, Lando, do you got one of those dehydration tablets? My shorts are kind of wet.
Exactly. It just seems weird to me that this is the time period that's being chosen again, but at the same time, as weird as it is from a, wow, there's so much stuff in there, really, point of view, it does fall back on the same thing as that Star Wars ongoing series, which supposedly they say, you know, that the guy writing it, Brian Wood, he's actually a big Star Wars fan, so we shouldn't worry. You know, I'll believe it when I see it that we shouldn't worry, but at least that's something that they put out there to kind of quell some of the fear. But it's still that same question is, okay, really? So you're going to this era, why? Because it's easily marketable, because it's a better entry point for new readers, it's more accessible. But then how do you deal with all the different continuity headaches of trying to fit all this stuff in there together and make it actually work? On the other hand, though, sitting back and kind of looking at it, it strikes me that in that era, we really don't have a lot of actual novels about the film characters. We tend to have a whole lot of comics, strips, RPG materials and such, young reader books like Rebel Force, not a whole heck of a lot of novels. So, you know, I'm excited to see where they go with it, as long as they do it, again, just like with Sword of the Jedi. They need to do it in the right way so it doesn't wind up feeling like it was a wasted effort. I will forever look back on Allegiance and Choices of One as a wasted effort, because in the time frame in which it was set, it could have been something greater, could have been something more interesting, and it wasn't. Heck, Choices of One doesn't even give us a reason to give a crap about the fight between Thrawn and his supposed nemesis, and we don't even get the end of the story, really, because that has to come in the Heir to the Empire novella for the anniversary reprint edition. It just kind of feels as though those were amazingly missed opportunities here. I don't want to see that happen again, because if people are going to use these as an entry point, if that's the point of making them, they need to be good. They need to not feel like fluff. Even a new reader to Star Wars knows when they're reading fluff. That's why I don't read most EU-style books of most franchises, because you know when you're reading fluff that doesn't matter. Star Wars has one unified continuity. Make these stories matter somehow.
Well, and you know, from the other side of it here, the original trilogy versus prequel trilogy, you know, you've got that division in fandom. There's no denying it. And if you don't put out this style books for the new fans to come in and be interested in Luke, Han, and Leia, then they're just going to want to stick with Obi-Wan, Padme, and Anakin. And basically, they're going to be sticking with the prequel trilogy, and the original trilogy is going to slowly become the least favored. You know, and I'm not going to go into a game of favorites here, but there is that aspect of it that at least they're continuing to bring people that have no idea of the greater EU going on to keep them interested in what's going on, even though we've got a TV show aimed at kids. We've now got all this other stuff aimed at kids, but it's mainly prequel aim. You know, it's now, I mean, granted, Detour's got Han and Leia in there, but it's still, it's set more in the prequel era than the original trilogy. So they're at least keeping people interested in that, and I like that aspect.
Yeah, it's probably the one big positive coming out of it. The continuity mess that could ensue with that, with the new Star Wars series and such, the ended storylines that we see in favor of, well, we're just going to drop these comic series and go for something more accessible. I mean, there's a lot of negative aspects to it, as we covered it with the San Diego Comic-Con episode, but at least they are, when they are bringing in new ideas, they're sort of starting to space it out a little bit more, and we do wind up seeing the focus slowly shifting back towards the classic trilogy as opposed to always just being prequels. Speaking of prequels and shifting back around in the circle, we have some hints right now, though not much of anything to say about it, because it just isn't much out there, that it's possible we may finally be seeing a continuation of Imperial or Republic Commando with another author. All they basically said is nothing to report now, but look out for some good news type of stuff. So that sounds like there's a possibility.
Well, that also, though, could be, I had heard that there is a writer that's introducing a new Imperial commander named, I think it was Gregor. And he had tweeted, you know, something about how, you know, it had been mentioned and it was just already blowing up, how people are excited and how he's really excited about it. That could also be what they're talking about.
Isn't Gregor the one that's in the prequel or the preview clip for Clone Wars?
Maybe.
The guy in yellow?
That could be. I'm not sure. I'd only saw the tweet by the guy that was writing the thing. And I was like, that's interesting in and of itself. I mean, you know, it's one of those things like, as an EU fan who's worried about continuity, I hear Republic Commando and I immediately cringe because I'm afraid they're going to tie it to the book series. But I think it's pretty obvious at this point that they're not going to go out of their way to tie them aside from what they did. And when they did it, they kept it pretty mild and kept it working. And I like that. Hats off to Dave Filoni for whatever he was able to do to make it so it didn't crash with anything. But I could see with the way we get hints and rumors and stuff that could easily be, you know, that character might be getting a forefront role in one of the episodes or something, and that could be what they were hinting at, too. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, if they really want to finish up the story of Imperial Commando, it'd be really simple to do. I mean, they've got all these short stories that they're putting in the pages of Star Wars Insider. They're, what, 3, 4, 5 pages long or so at the most? You take out all the repetitive conversations and going around in circles in Imperial Commando, that's about how much story you got left. Just give us a short story and end cap the thing. What, was that facetious?
Well, you could easily do it as a, you know, didn't we know it was either Baradan? Yeah, it was Baradan Jessic. We learned he is still alive in Legacy of the Force. So you could easily tell a story from his point of view, set it with the Jaina Solo trilogy even, give those fans their quick little wrap-up in some form where maybe he's telling Boba Fett about where Clan Skarrat is hiding so they can help Boba Fett. I don't know. I don't care. But they could give us that information in a flashback of some form. I'm with you. I don't see it being too hard. Yeah, you're not going to please everyone, but it's Star Wars. You never please everyone. There's a light and a dark side for a reason, people.
Well, you know, Jedi Solo, it was at that time that we gave up on Darman, because when he had the chance to get off the planet and go be with his son, the moron decided to stay behind. What a great dad he was. We decided to let him stay and get killed by rebels. Anyway.
And he took Niner down with him.
There you go. We also learning now a little bit more. This is shortly after Celebration 6 when I saw this, though it may have been mentioned while they were there. And that is that on the ebook front, we are winding up seeing that there will now be ebooks of the Essential Guides coming soon, although I'm assuming that only works on the same type of ebook readers you could use magazines with, so Kindle Fire, Nook Tablet, or Nook Color, not something to be an e-ink, because the art and such in those really wouldn't translate over well to simply e-ink screens. And also, there is the potential now for new ebook exclusive short stories, something very much like we saw with things like A Practical Man and whatnot a while back, and Lost Tribe of the Sith, although it seems like it's more standalone stories, not series of stories. It seems like it keeps being mentioned in the same breath as that win or lose all. I can't tell if it's win or lose all or win or lose all. I've seen it written both ways, but that new Timothy Zahn story meant to tie into Scoundrels. So it seems as though they're opening things up again to the ebook venue. Makes me wonder if it's that they just wanting to kind of turn around and go back to something, and they always had ebooks in the plans, and now they're just wanting to go back and do that now that Lost Tribe of the Sith is over, or if this really is kind of a separate thing. Because you know what, the novels, they're only given a certain number of novels they can produce in a given year or a given contract. I'm not sure if it works the same way for ebooks. If it did, maybe Lost Tribe of the Sith sucked up all the ebooks for its time, and now it's sort of freed up that queue so they can start putting new ones in. Or maybe it's a completely different contract to it. But either way, expect some exclusive ebook Star Wars stories. So yet another reason to get an ebook reader, or at least a free ebook reader app like Nook or Kindle app on your smart device, because it looks like more. Yeah, or computer if you want the eye strain.
Yeah, it's no fun, but hey, it's there, it's free, and it's available. I'm with you. I think this is a good thing. I'm actually excited that the ebooks are going digital. I think digital is a frontier that we will see Lucasfilm, Lucasbooks, and all that be exploring. You know, they're always kind of like at the forefront when it comes to exploring new technologies. And, you know, we've talked just in one of our last episodes about going digital with our collections, and my ebooks are one of the biggest and most heaviest boxes I have had to move from my studio to the other one. It's like, oh my gosh, talk about give yourself a hernia, you know, and to be able to have them on an ebook or a Nook reader or whatever, I just think that that is going to be invaluable down the road. And I really think that they're going to continue to offer, you know, like we said in the last episode, the format things might be the stuff to worry about, but I really think that they're going to get behind it and they're going to be pushing it and exploring the boundaries of this new product.
Speaking of new products, you know, games were another thing that was brought up at Celebration 6, though not a whole lot of news about different video games and such. There was mention of how they're going to take the Clone Wars Adventures MMO, that younger audience multiplayer online thing, which honestly, I was surprised still existed. I was like, oh, Clone Wars Adventures is still around. I was on the beta test on that and didn't play it at all afterwards. Barely played it during the beta test. It's fun for kids. It just doesn't have a lot of content really for the adults in the audience and such. But I mean, that was its target audience anyway. But they said they're going to do some more things where it sort of ties into the cartoon show, similar to the way that they did the story that was essentially a prequel to the Mon Calamari episodes. So they're going to be tying those together too. They did show more stuff show kind of the same stuff and talk a little bit more about Star Wars 1313, though it doesn't seem as though there was a whole lot of new information announced for that. And you had mentioned something before the show that I hadn't even heard of. What's with this other rumor about games out there?
Well, Skoldrin from Roko Depot, he posted an article that pointed it out to me. But according to Fusible, Lucasfilm has registered trademarks and domain names for Star Wars First Assault, including the domain StarWarsFirstAssault.com. Nothing much else is known yet, but it's a pretty good indicator that there may be a video game title in the Star Wars franchise coming down the line, or any other thing. But usually, that seems to be something that would make you think video game. I mean, there was another Assault game on the PC. What the heck was the name of that one, man? I just remember being
Rebel Assault. I had that on the old Sega CD. That was a game that was a weird one, because the first game put you essentially in like a quasi not quite Luke type character, and you essentially played through at least originally before they tweaked it and changed the what it was supposed to be from what it was actually supposed to be to what they now say, oh, it was always meant to be this way, a very Lucas type thing to do. But you started during the beginning of A New Hope and kind of jumped to Hoth during Empire Strikes Back and then jump back for the Death Star battle. It was all kinds of crazy. You had A-Wings and A-Wing helping you the same way that Han helped Luke at the Death Star. It was kind of crazy, but they've kind of found ways to work in at least bits and pieces, sort of rework what the name of that base was, since they never called it, you know, Hoth and Echo Base and such. And it winds up being, you know, it's an odd game, but its sequel was pretty good. Its sequel's been referenced plenty of times. Rebel Assault, The Hidden Empire, I believe it was called. So, you know, but the horrible thing would be, what if this was a sequel to that? You know, kind of like, oh, really? We're going back to that same thing? Or better yet, it could wind up being that this has nothing to do with the new video game. Maybe this is an advertising campaign. Because think about it. We have the Star Wars films coming in 3D. Eventually, they're going to get to Return of the Jedi. They're going to get Leia in the bikini in 3D. Maybe that's Frontal Assault.
Womp, womp, womp.
Too much build-up for not a very good punchline. But still, you know, we don't know what it is, but it'd be cool if what we're hearing is a new game, because they definitely need... It seems as though Star Wars games, from a video game standpoint, really have sort of ground to a halt in many respects, as we've talked about before. The new games that are coming from Fantasy Flight Games, which at this point I almost feel like they're going to be in a next episode, because it seems like we're going to have to split this sucker in half. There's new games coming out in card and miniature and RPG form, but from the standpoint of video games, it seems like, you know, barring 1313, you're just kind of plodding along.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where most of the popular games are military games, and I still question why we don't have a Rogue Squadron or another Battlefront game. It's like, these are the very popular games right now, and you've got an easy genre to do it. I mean, heck, zombies popular, let's have a Death Troopers game. I mean, come on. Also, though, things we're hearing, we hear from EU Cantina that Dark Times is continuing with a new arc entitled Fire Carrier. The plot will focus on Kruk, one of my favorite characters, and the Padawans, as the story continues from the second arc in the series. It was noted that this arc is intense and should shake readers up, but that a future arc will be what fans have been waiting for since the beginning. So Nathan, what you've been waiting for all this time is coming.
It's going to end. They're going to end the stinking series finally. I don't know. The fact that Dark Times is still going always amazes me, but I always run into people who say it's one of their favorite Star Wars comics, so it must just be my particular sensibilities.
This for me is the arc of Dark Times that will be my make it or break it, because I loved the second arc. I've been waiting for them to come back to it, and if it wrapped up, if it pulled an invasion and satisfied itself with its conclusion, I would have been just ticked, because I have been waiting for this. This is my light at the end of the tunnel. Kruk's one of my favorite characters. Like I said, I can't wait to see him finally make his way into the books, more than a few of Karen Travis's little mentions here and there.
Speaking of Kruk, and, you know, the idea of waiting for things that could be good, it does seem as though there's a possibility, maybe, of a continuation of Legacy, which had Kruk in it, thanks to comments from John Ostrander, or not John Ostrander, I guess it was Randy Stradley, essentially saying, you know, to, you know, keep an eye out, you know, it's possible, you know, you might like to see something coming up. I guess I should also take a moment.
Keep your eyes open, he said, quote unquote.
Yeah, I should take a second here. Thank you very much, by the way, out there to David Senden of the A Few Good Clones podcast, because he was able to help me get that Legacy print. I was able to pre-order Jan Dersma's Legacy print, and he was able to get it, pick it up for me, get it signed, and send it out to me FedEx, like, incredibly fast. Really, really cool art print. They made 250 of them, so if you can get your hands on one, if you're a fan of Legacy, the art print's really kind of neat. Cade looks kind of like he's grumbly, but, you know, that's Cade. We've also found that, speaking of stories going forward, and you mentioned it there with the whole satisfying ending, we got another bit of explanation recently about the end of Invasion. And we were told that the reason Invasion ended where it did, with multiple cliffhangers and unresolved issues, whether it's Dre or what the heck is going on inside of young Finn, or what's going to happen now with the somehow superpower daughter and the crazy Yuuzhan Vong stepmother and so forth, that they had reached the decision to end it at that point with the possibility of future stories, but to end it there because it had reached a, quote, satisfying conclusion.
Bullshit!
What conclusion? That's what I want to know. Not is the conclusion satisfying or not, but what conclusion are they talking about?
I am at a complete loss. I am just... I don't know. I want to cry. It tears me up. No, I mean, it's just one of those things where I am like, seriously? There is so... I'm okay when John Jackson Miller does those same kind of things where he'll seed in something like, oh, look, there's something in this guy's body. Then we go a little farther. Oh, hey, this thing in his body, it's Yuuzhan Vong. Then we go a little farther along and, oh, that thing in his body, well, his mom's also a shaper hiding as a human. but not really his mom, it's his stepmom. And then, you know, you get another arc, and then you get a nice, satisfying John Jackson Miller-style conclusion where he'll give you all the breadcrumbs and give you a cake at the end. But I'm not getting my cake! I could smell it. I could see the crumbs, like, on the table. I want my freaking cheesecake!
I don't wonder if part of it was just that Tom Taylor, the writer for the series, if, you know, they have him on several other things, so maybe it's just a matter of clearing his schedule as well. But it does seem bizarre to say...
popular. That could be it.
I don't know, it just seems very, very strange that they would say that, that's the reason. It reached a satisfying point.
Well, that just says something in and of itself. I mean, man, of late, it seems like just Randy will say anything. I mean, we got a guy that's going to work on this show. He's not concerned with continuity. Even though we've already said that this is a continuity nightmare to walk on, you got to be pretty continuity savvy to do it. But we don't want somebody that's going to be cut down and tied down by that because, hey, you know, it's Star Wars. We don't care.
Well, I guess there is some good news, though, coming from the comic front here. We do know that they are now returning, it seems like, to Purge. There's going to be a two-part story called Purge, the Tyrant's Fist, although it's hard to see whether that is meant to actually be a continuation of Purge, that's been three one-shots so far, or if it's more tying into the idea of this is sort of the continuation of the Vader stories we get with Darth Vader and the Lost Command and the really good Darth Vader and the Ghost Prison that's been going on very recently. But we've got another Purge story coming. There's hints at the idea that Dark Horse and Del Rey may be working together to tell a story where each one tells their own part of the story through their own particular medium, which we haven't really seen in specific organized form as opposed to just being events that cross over, really since Shadows of the Empire, it seems like, because other times things like Deceived crossing over with Treaty of Coruscant from the Old Republic comics seemed like that was just trying to retell the same events, not to actually coordinate it initially and announce it as a coordinated project. So there's a possibility of that. Anything else on the comic front, really?
Well, let's see. There was more information about Brian Wood's new series. Stradley noted that a lot of rumors began when the series was announced, but that nobody has it right. He confirmed that the series is not a reboot. So he basically said, yes, it's just going to trample over continuity if there's a problem. Not going to do its own thing. No, I'm just poking fun at Randy there. And he also advised the crowd to attend Wood's panel on Friday night to learn more. And now, I'm actually interested to hear more about that. Anybody who had attended that panel and has some insight, please send it to our Facebook page. I'd love to hear some insight on that. Because I want to say I'm trepidatious about it. You know, I want to be open-minded still. But, you know, when you hear it's not going to be a reboot, which, you know, there's one side of me that doesn't want it to be, but there's the side of me that does. I want to see that division and breakaway. But I'm just curious to see what their plan is. If nobody's got it right, I mean, there's a vast world out there, and if nobody has it right, I don't know. I'm beginning to think Stradley is telling tall tales and folk tales.
We'll see. It shouldn't be too long till it's out. It'll be the beginning of next year. All right, that's the other thing. Speaking of next year, almost forgot, they are finally going to be doing those two volumes of omnibus editions that are going to collect the UK comics that haven't been collected in the U.S., and also includes some other miscellaneous sort of harder-to-find, bizarre, offshoot tale kind of stories. So we are finally going to get those. It just appears that they're not going to be doing those as part of the A Long Time Ago omnibus series, like they were originally announcing. So A Long Time Ago remains just Marvel, and Droids and Ewoks got their own separate one outside of even that. And now, also outside of that, we've got the Marvel UK stuff and that sort of thing. So it should be cool, but I'm kind of bothered by the fact that it's going to take so long to get them. You know, I love the bizarre aspect of some of those stories. It'd be fun to see them, but, you know, it's good enough to wait, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know, they did also say that there was, with Invasion, there was always a chance to revisit the characters in the future. They also said there was also no plans for more of the Old Republic. The fact that they said that, oh, that's your window of opportunity, people. I mean, that's the light at our end of the tunnel for those of us that want to know what's going to happen to Finn and all them. I think you're right. Tom Taylor's probably just so overwhelmed with Darth Maul right now, his popularity. I'm sure they probably just said, you know, we want you to focus on these stories at the moment. And that's probably what has done it. Because I have a hard time, unless the numbers were really just that poor for Invasion, seeing it being that bad of a story. I was really enjoying it.
Yeah, only thing that ever got me about Invasion really was the artwork style. And it was one that sort of fit, but at the same time, it was a little jarring when we first saw it. But I don't know, it seemed like it was hitting its stride, and now it's just kind of run into a brick wall. I'll just spring this on you now. I'm looking at this episode. We've covered a lot of stuff, and I think we've covered pretty much all the Celebration 6 news. But we still have some other news tying into that and Gen Con coming out of Fantasy Flight Games with these new games that we've got coming. I'm thinking maybe a mini episode released between this one and the next one that's regularly scheduled. Give folks a little extra Star Wars-y goodness to go with the week here in September's beginning. What do you think?
Yeah, we could do that, I think. Just number it like normal so it won't throw off our feeds or anything. And they've been warned, after all. And who knows? With the way we carry on, it could become a full episode.
Oh, Lord, if that happens, I don't know. I'm going to lose my voice and the asthma is going to go, "You will stop talking about the games."
Yeah, I'm going to be sweating to the oldies over here. But yeah, let's give it a shot.
All right, cool. Then I guess at this point that pretty much wraps us up for this time.
That's right. And remember, you can listen to our show airing on Middle Earth Network Radio as well as streaming on the Star Wars Report website, www.starwarsreport.com. Our episodes are also available right on our Facebook page at SW Beyond Films. Or just type in Star Wars Beyond the Films in the search bar. No matter how you get there, though, be sure to like our page. That is the best way to interact with us. Although I admit I got seismic, so I'm now actually interacting with you on Twitter as well. So maybe that will change down the road. We'll see. Not only can you post comments, though, on our Facebook page while you listen to the show, you just might be heard on the show. Each month, we will release feedback episodes when we have enough emails. So be sure to email us. You might actually be on the show. You can email us at SWBeyondFilms@StarWarsFanWorks.com. And with that, this has been Mark Hurdleman and Whistler.
And Nathan Butler.
Saying, thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds that your comic series will have a satisfying ending.
Ooh. Or it won't mess up continuity.